It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 96% always is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And it's like a Wednesday night right now.
I don't know that we've ever done this on a Wednesday. For maybe the six people that listen to this that don't know, I work at the stores on Wednesdays, and I'm usually
Wednesday
there.
Is New Comic Day.
Yeah.
I believe everyone who listens to this podcast knows Wednesday is New Comic
Day.
Yeah,
so I was there, and then you're leaving town tomorrow for a wedding.
Yeah, I'm flying to San Francisco, which is actually a great comic town, but I couldn't think of anyone I could interview out there.
Yeah.
Mike Drucker used to live out there, but
he's since moved on.
He just moved to L.A. Actually, he announced it yesterday. We mentioned last week that he has left The Tonight Show.
Yes.
He's going to be the new co-head writer on Bill Nye the Science Guy on his new Netflix,
which is awesome. I just today heard about. Yes, congratulations. That's fantastic. I just heard about this show today. But it was like one of the trending things on Facebook, and it's like Bill Nye.
I heard about it because he posted it.
And yeah,
like, this is what I'm doing.
That's so cool. Good for him.
Yeah, so we'll have to watch that.
So yeah, we're kind of like squeezing this in under the wire because we're both not going to be around on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm flying out in the morning, and I'm not going to be back till Tuesday. So that's a whole.
Oh
week.
Yeah, that's fast.
And we care about this. Podcast.
And we care. We're really making an effort here. So here we are Wednesday night with, instead of coffee, we're doing drinks.
Oh yeah, we're having porters now because it's been a long day. It's been free. Yeah. It's been comic day. I had like it's Sebastian's third birthday, so he's three.
Yeah,
still a jerk.
Right, because he's still operating under those terrible twos.
On the twos, yeah.
Yeah.
He hasn't realized that's over.
He's like an adorable jerk. You know, I never have to deal with it, so it's adorable to me. Because it's like he's just kind of like a tiny little frat boy, you know? Yeah. It's like he's harmless. He's not hurting anybody. But he's like...
He's like an episode of Dan Versus.
Yeah, he's just kind of like an angry little hot mess. And I love every minute of it.
Yeah, he definitely takes after me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Dan Versus was one of my favorite animated series.
Great,
I showed it to you.
Yeah.
It was a show, I think it was like Disney XD or Hub. It was The Hub.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a Disney type show.
No, but it didn't last. But it was Curtis Armstrong, Paget Brewster, and Dave Foley. And I love all of those people in anything. And it was just about this little angry guy.
Yeah, it was like kind of a, you know, they say Seinfeld was like a show about nothing. Mm-hmm. This was a show about nothing except this angry guy.
Yeah.
And it's like every little thing would set him off. And he was like angry at everything.
Yeah.
And he wasn't always unjustified, you know?
But you can't find it. They put season one out on DVD. And then
I know
season,
where you can find it.
It ran three various BitTorrent sites. Is
no,
that...
it's there's a website called Kiss Cartoon. It is probably that torn. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But it's like every cartoon you can name is like on this website. It's incredible.
I have to look that up.
So I saw The Killing Joke.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And speaking of The Killing Joke, this podcast, for those of you who haven't caught on yet, is going to be about nothing.
No, well, there's a lot of stuff in the news. But
we have a couple things to cover.
We're just
discussing.
I don't think any one of them is the main topic.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those podcasts, and we do these now and then, where it's like, this will be 15 minutes, and then this will be 20 minutes.
Yeah. They released... an honest trailer, you know those guys that do.
Well, yeah, they did that last night.
Did you see the Killing Joke one?
It was really good.
Yeah, it's pretty great, and it's those guys are. There's a couple like of those guys who do like the movie reviews slash trailers for like How It Should Have Ended is really good. The honest trailers are really good. These guys are smart and they're good and they have like intellectually good points. The ones I don't watch anymore and I actually really fuck this guy, whoever you are, I don't know who you are. He does one like everything wrong with this movie in 60 seconds or something.
It gets so nitpicky.
It's
not
like
even funny
eat
anymore.
A dick, eat a bag of dicks. Fuck that guy. It's like fuck off. You know, it's like I criticize movies too, like every other human being. But it's like this guy is like relentless.
He's like trying to pull movies apart.
Yeah, it's like any movie you can pull.
But
the
honest
strings.
Trailer for Killing Joke was kind of every point we made.
Yeah, it made a couple of things that I didn't catch. Like the joke at the end is like Commissioner Gordon tells Batman, "Have you seen Barbara? I've seen pictures of her." And it's just like, that's a really awkward conversation. It's like, oh yeah, Batman fucking fucked Batgirl in this fucking movie.
Yeah. Where they said, first, before you watch The Killing Joke, you have to watch a 40-minute subpar Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
I also listen to Comedy Film Nerds, which is a really good podcast. They review movies that come out that week, and they did The Killing Joke.
Okay.
And the one thing they mentioned about The Killing Joke that I didn't pick up was they were saying, Batman's relationship to his sidekicks is always fatherly, which makes it way creepier.
Yeah.
And I think I was saying in the podcast, well, this is a standalone universe that, you know, it's not part of Batman the Animated Series. It's not part of the New 52 movies. It's kind of on its own, so they could have a different relationship. But in Comedy Film Nerds, they point out the part that is Kevin Conroy and Tara Strong and Mark Hamill. There's no way to not feel that it's Batman the Animated Series and it's those characters.
And that is an interesting point. But like we've talked about before, and this is like rehashing old stuff, is like the Batman Beyond show hints, and maybe more than strongly hints, that Batman and Barbara had some kind of relationship. And at the time, I remember being like, well, I don't really have a problem with that because they don't really define when the relationship happens. So if Batman's like 45 and Barbara's like 25 or 30, I don't have really a problem with that. But when Batman's like 30 and Barbara's like 19, it's just like, that would be like, I'm 30. And it's like, I don't even want to date like 22-year-olds. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and I'm not, no offense, like 22-year-olds.
Much less like a 22-year-old who works for you.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just weird.
It's not.
And it's not going to work out, and it's just like a weird thing to do.
But speaking of Batman, one of the things that happened this week was Ben Affleck cryptically tweeted a video with no caption of someone in a Deathstroke suit.
Yeah.
And people went nuts.
Yeah, I don't ever have to look on the internet to look for anything. Everything just kind of comes to me where like Caffeinated Comics will post something because you're into this stuff, and or one of the guys
I'll
at the shop will tag me.
It,
yeah, as soon as you see it, you repost it, and you post the stuff faster than I usually see it. But Nick Bade's been on the podcast before. Nick had tagged me, and he's like, hey, like, look at this thing. And I didn't like know what it was because I was like, oh, cool, like, what a cool stunt guy, like a great cosplay for a Deathstroke, because I had no clue this was kind of coming down the pipe. I was just like, oh, cool, there's some cosplay out there for Deathstroke. And then I talked to him, and I'm like, what is that? And he's like, that's Ben Affleck released. It's like footage from the set, either test footage or it's going to be movie footage.
Yeah, it seems like it's like test of the costume.
Yeah.
But I had an even more muted reaction where I was like, wait, why are we looking at footage of Arrow?
Because
he just looked to me like the Deathstroke and Arrow.
Yeah.
So I was, and that's why I couldn't get excited when everybody got excited. It was like, oh my God, Deathstroke's going to be in a movie. We've had him for episode after episode after episode of Arrow. It's not like Clayface is in a movie.
Yeah.
It's not like a character we haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't make the connection to Arrow. Firstly, I know you don't watch it. I don't watch Arrow either, so...
But I watched it enough to see Deathstroke on it.
Yeah, and I've seen, like, the action figure at the store. You know, we sold is, like, here's the Deathstroke. Here's what he looks like. So I know what he looks like in the show. But I think because, like, I never watched the show, he might as well not exist. Because I'm not watching a show. You know what I mean? So it's like...
So by that logic... Every book you don't read
might as well not exist. And, you know, it's like, it's basically, how do I know any of you people exist when I'm not looking? You know,
that's
it's
called like, solipsism.
It's what's that?
It's called solipsism.
What does that mean?
It's a type of philosophy that thinks that you're the only person that alive and everything else is a figment of your imagination.
Me and my brother used to have this fucked up theory when we were kids that, you know, we go to... Disney World on vacation, and we'd be like, well, maybe we're not really going to Disney World. Maybe we're not driving thousands of miles to Florida, but maybe we're just in a car on a road that goes around and around and around. So, you know, the stupid, like, bullshit philosophy nonsense. Anyway.
I have that feeling late at night when I'm driving. Every now and then I go, what if I've already passed out and I've crashed?
Right.
And this is the coma.
This is the lucid coma dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
So, back to the Deathstroke thing, I was excited. I like Deathstroke as a character, even though he's a less cool Taskmaster. and we can argue about that if you like, but he is.
Taskmaster is a less cool everybody.
No, Taskmaster is a great supervillain, and George Perez is a hero for making
him. Taskmaster is a less cool Storm Shadow.
No, he's great. Who the fuck is Storm Shadow?
The ninja in G.I. Joe.
Fuck Storm Shadow. All right, so so Deathstroke's cool enough, right? I like the idea that Justice League looks like it's going to have more than one villain.
Well, that's the debate going on right now. Is this for Justice League? Ooh, or because Ben Affleck put it out, is this for his Batman movie?
Ooh. You see, I don't know.
So, like, some of the...
I think because everything's been kind of crazy about Justice League, that's where everyone's mind's going. But you're right. It's probably more likely Batman. Because if Joker and Harley are the villains in Batman, they're great villains. But they're not...
And I'm sure they'll be... You know, we talked about this when Suicide Squad came out. They're like Joker's given such little screen time, and Harley's built up so much that they both kind of seem like they're primed to for their next movie, in Suicide Squad.
And so, you know, we'll see kind of what happens. But it's like the reason I think you'd bring Deathstroke in is like there's a physical counterpart to Batman. This is Joker can't go one on one with Batman. It never happens. Every time he does it, he gets the snot kicked out of him.
Yeah, that fight doesn't last.
It's not a long.
Joker's always pulling out guns and knives.
Yeah,
and
Batman's just really just kind of knocking this shit out of his hands and just beating the tar out of him. So
that's
like,
why Joker is constantly creating fun houses where he's standing in the back of
them. Traps and all this bullshit. Yeah. And here's 30 guys you have to fight all these carnies. You know, Deathstroke's a guy that can take on the Justice League. This guy is kind of like he's like a one-man army.
He's actually a really good Batman villain, which is interesting considering he started as a Teen Titans villain.
Yeah, well, I think he's one of those, he's a great villain in the sense where, like, the best villains, I think, not only can fight their hero counterpart, but that they go outside of themselves and fight other heroes. Like, Dr. Doom's a great example. This dude does not give a fuck who the Fantastic Four are. He'll fight them all day, but this guy will fight Spider-Man, he'll fight Captain America, he'll fight the Avengers, he'll fight Thor, he'll fight the Silver Surfer. He doesn't give a fuck who you are. He'll fight everybody.
When I was a kid, I thought Dr. Doom was a Captain America villain because I just kind of picked one of them at random.
Right.
Because it seemed like he was just mad at the Marvel Universe.
Right. And that's like Darkseid's another example where it's like he's primarily a Superman villain, but more often than not, he's fighting the Justice League or the Legion of Superheroes.
I'll correct you there. Darkseid is an Orion villain.
Oh,
Darkseid was created just for New
Just
Gods,
for Orion, yeah.
And then was
repurposed.
Well, kind of
like,
got into Superman because one of the Fourth World comics was Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of got to Superman, then kind of got to Justice League.
Yeah, and I guess I think because I watched the Superman animated show and they used him as
a
Superman villain.
That.
Oh, he's perfect. He's like he's the perfect big bad guy, more arguably than Brainiac or Alex.
There's that moment in Father's Day, which is the one where Kalibak fights Superman.
That's a great episode, yeah.
It's so great. But the end, there's one line where he comes back and Michael Dorn did Kalibak, so it's like Worf as Kalibak. He's like, Father!
Yeah.
He's like, I went to fight Superman! And he goes, I wanted to beat him in your honor! And Darkseid just kind of turns just a little over his shoulder and just goes, and did you? And that was just it. You're just like, oh!
Yeah. And it's like, Kalibak's like all beat up and shit. Yeah. You know, it's like Superman dropped a building on him.
He's got like that club is broken.
Yeah. Great episode.
Yeah, but Deathstroke is one of those guys. I mean,
ironically, never used in Justice League, right? He wasn't used in Justice League. He wasn't used in Batman.
You mean
he wasn't
Justice League Unlimited. He was never used in Batman.
They used Deadshot.
He was
never
in Teen Titans Go. He was in the series version, and I believe he was in Young Justice. But I don't recall him. And I remember Deadshot showing up in
Deadshot
Justice League
Unlimited.
Deadshot
shows up because Michael Rosenbaum voiced him.
Yeah, but maybe not Deathstroke.
But I don't remember Deathstroke, and he's kind of like it's weird because at the time Justice League was coming out, I think they were doing like Villains United, and they'd done Identity Crisis. Where if you haven't read Identity Crisis, I don't know how you feel about it, John. I don't know if we've ever talked about it. Identity Crisis was a book I really, really do like.
I liked it. It set a bad precedent.
It did. And I think stuff that came after it's a lot of unfortunate. There's always kind of like an unfortunate like backwash to the big successes. And I think Identity Crisis was a book. It was a really good book. It was really well drawn. It's one of those books where when I read it, I get chills at certain points in that book. Brad Meltzer wrote it in Rags Morales, so it was like at the height of his career.
And he really wrote it like a novel. It doesn't read like a comic.
No,
at all.
It was perfect. But they did a great issue with Deathstroke, and it was kind of one of... I'm not really a big DC guy, And I knew Deathstroke was a Titans villain, and I had the general idea of who this guy was.
He had his own book for a long time in the 90s.
He still does. Right now, he's still got his own book. During the New 52, he's had his own book. But they did this great fight with Deathstroke versus the Justice League. And they just showed how, like, a vaguely realistic guy, right? He's supposed to be kind of like a Captain America, the height of his powers type person. Super smart, but super good fighter. Would take down the Justice League. And, like, how does a guy like that fight the Flash and Green Lantern and Hawkman and all these guys at the same time? And he beats him, and it's not like bullshit. It's a lot of times they do this where it's like one guy beat the whole thing, and it's really shittily
it's
done.
It's like when Wolverine beat Lobo in the
It's like they jump behind a bar, and that's the end of it. It's like this was a really, I thought, good fight, and it had explained how it wasn't like an easy thing for him to do. Deathstroke like beat them all, but they're doing like his internal monologue, and he's like, yep, don't know if I can keep doing this. Thank God Flash did this thing that I was hoping it would do. Yep, Hawkman reacted this way. Yep, I was able to take out Adam with a laser pointer. It's like he did all this really, really thoughtful stuff as far as how to do it, and it was kind of cemented Deathstroke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like, really a turning point for him. And as I said, this was at a point where he already had his own book.
Right.
But this kind of repositioned
him. This positioned him as kind of like the A-list, like quote-unquote, like, thug for hire in the DC universe, where it's like, if you were going to... He's like
Bullseye times 10.
Yeah, it's like Bullseye is great for taking on Daredevil, and he can fight Captain America and maybe fight Spider-Man. Daredevil's not... Or Bullseye's not going to fight the Avengers. It's no contest.
Yeah, he's not going to fight Wolverine.
Right, yeah. And that's the thing, is that, like, Deathstroke was a dude where as soon as they did that issue, it was kind of like, if you've got money to throw around and you want to fight the Justice League, Deathstroke is like the top dollar you can pay for. If you can't afford an Amazo robot, you buy Deathstroke, you know? And it was just cool. He's just a great character.
Yeah, there's the second big Deathstroke moment, I think, is actually in the video games.
Yeah, and he's Arkham Knight.
He's in Arkham Origins. He's in the third game. And he's the first big boss battle in it. And it's interesting because usually I find the video games to be kind of a side thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm such an old gamer that none of them could really carry a mythology when I was growing up. I mean, Atari was just like little pixels running around.
Yeah.
And then the Nintendo was just side-scrolling, like you walk and you beat up people and then you keep walking right.
Right.
But the Arkham games have...
Oh, they're unbelievable.
They've kind of created their own universe, and the fight in Deathstroke, the only way to beat him, it's a really hard fight. Even if you said it's easy, it's a really hard fight. But the only way to beat him is to match him move for move for move for move, and it's a long fight.
Yeah.
And if you hit any of those out of the rhythm, he just clobbers you.
Yeah.
And he'll like he speeds up, he slows down, and the way you fight him in that game just kind of cements his character of like he's someone who physically goes toe-to-toe with Batman.
Yeah.
Like, literally. Like, even the people you fight after Deathstroke are not quite as hard.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of why it kind of lends weight to the fact that he might be the villain in Batman, which I wouldn't mind.
Or there's a scene in Justice League where he fights Batman.
Right, because it's... I mean, like, there isn't really another equivalent to Batman as far as a villain goes. Like, you can talk about Prometheus or Ra's al Ghul or Bane, but it's like, they all kind of have some bullshit edge on Batman. Deathstroke really doesn't, other than he's basically evil Batman. He's as good as a fighter as you can be without having illegal drugs pumped in your system or being some immortal bullshit Lazarus pit monster person.
Don't attack Ra's al Ghul.
Well, I like Ra's al Ghul, but I'm saying like they have this extra nonsense edge that Batman doesn't have.
And Deathstroke was basically created to fight Robin and a bunch of his friends, which makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, and he's got this awesome history with the Teen Titans that's kind of like, with them, it's personal. It seems like with the larger DC universe, it's business. Yeah. Where he'll fight Batman, sure, if the price is right. But it's like that Robin and his little brat friends come along, fuck those guys, I'll do this for free.
And also, he's directly responsible for Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean,
Deadpool was created, we talked about this on our podcast when the movie came out, he was created as a parody of Deathstroke.
Yeah, and it's like, that's the thing, is like Deathstroke's a decent character.
Even their secret identities, Slade Wilson and Wade Wilson.
Oh, I mean, it's right on the nose as soon as you put two and two together.
I mean, it's not quite, it goes a little beyond Namor and Aquaman at that point.
Namor and Aquaman just happen to be the water guys from both companies. You know, this is Slade Wilson, Wade Wilson. It's like, it's clear, and Rob Liefeld doesn't have two brain cells to rub together, so it's like, clearly this guy doesn't have an original idea in his head. you know, we can credit people who came much later on Deadpool with what that character became.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It is one of those things where it kind of makes you a little more interested in the DC movies, and we haven't given up on them. It was interesting. I just did a gig last week, and we made a little extra money with my YouTube tribute band. So I was like, hey, what am I going to buy? You know what? I haven't gotten a Hot Toys in a little while. And I was like, you know what? I have Michael Keaton. I have Adam West. I have Christian Bale.
Can I get that
Bale.
Ben Affleck, huh?
I was like, I guess I'll get Ben Affleck because he's coming out now. He is sold out everywhere.
Really?
And I'm like, but people hate this movie. And they showed at San Diego that they're going to do a Suicide Squad Batman, which is the same suit.
Yeah. So you're going to get the Suicide Squad one?
I don't know. I'll see if this one pops up once he's like out in full force.
Yeah.
The Suicide Squad one they showed was wearing that like rebreather suit.
Doesn't that come off or have like
but
a replaceable?
I'm sure with a Hot Toys he's got a
second
hand.
That's what I'm saying.
Hand.
It's like, I mean.
And Justice League, you remind me, Justice League, he's got the same suit.
It's the same
so
suit.
So the guy's wearing the same suit in three movies already.
Yeah.
So I figure most people would just kind of wait this one out. And there were enough people that hated Batman vs. Superman, but nope. I'm sure Superman is still in stock.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the thing is like people might have hated Superman vs. Batman, and I think people are very divided on that movie. I don't think it's quite as clear. I think a lot of people we talk to hate that movie. Mm-hmm. I do have a lot of customers that really like it, but it's Batman. Batman always sells. No matter what you do,
right.
Batman is going to sell, right? Because you hated that movie. And you didn't really like Suicide Squad, nope. And you still want to buy the Hot Toy, because it's Batman.
And I bought the Batman vs. Superman Blu-ray.
Because it's Batman. And it had Batman, did you buy them? I mean, I know you did buy Man of Steel, right, eventually?
No, I got Man of Steel free.
Okay.
Because they had, Toys R Us had that exclusive Christopher Reeve Superman.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
They were packaged with DVDs, and because Man of Steel is more, I guess, more modern than any of his films. That's how I ended up with it. So I have it on DVD, not Blu-ray.
But because you bought a different figure. It's not like if you...
Yeah, it was like somebody gave it to me, basically.
Right. But, and that's the thing, but that's what I'm saying, is like,
but Batman
no matter
or
what...
Superman? Yeah, I bought it from Amazon the day it came out.
Because Batman.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's like that. Batman never doesn't sell.
And that's the thing. So any tease we get about another Batman movie, whether it was good or not, as fans, we're trying to will these DC movies into being good.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about this a bit on Suicide Squad, and I feel optimistic after Suicide Squad. I am not going to pretend that was some game-changing, phenomenal movie, but it was the first DC movie, not counting the Batman Christopher Nolan's, because they were such independent.
I'm not counting any of the Batman.
But I think if you count,
because I don't
like,
think it was as good as the Tim Burton movies.
Right, but I'm saying if, like, you count Man of Steel, Green Lantern,
right.
Superman versus Batman, and Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad is head and shoulders above those other movies. And it was fun, which is the biggest point for me. So I do feel optimistic. The Wonder Woman trailer looks good.
Yep. The Justice League trailer was promising.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't look phenomenal. It doesn't look like the Avengers trailer to me, but mm-hmm. It looks good. So you know, we are trying absolutely. The fans want them to be good. We are trying to like as a collective will make these movies good.
Yeah. So when something like this comes out, when you get a hint of Deathstroke.
I'm all in.
Even though, as we said, this is a character who's been on TV for a long, long time.
Right.
I don't think if they showed a Supergirl in a movie, we'd be as excited. Nobody's really that excited to see the movie version of The Flash, because we have a Flash we like every
week. See, that's the thing where I can kind of go back to that point where, well, I'm not watching it. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I watched The Flash on Netflix. I saw the first season. I really like that kid.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go back to season two when it shows up on Netflix.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I feel like I could binge it. I don't feel like I could watch it
every week. Yeah, I'm kind of getting away from the... if something has like 25 episodes, there's no way I'm going to watch it week to week. It's not going to happen.
That's
but binge it at the store all day.
I was just reading an interview with Brian Fuller, who's doing that new Star Trek show.
Okay.
And he said if CBS asked him to do 26, he wouldn't do them.
Oh, really?
He said,
how many episodes are they going to do?
I think 12? They're doing 13. They're doing 10
and
or 13.
13's manageable. You know, it's like Jessica Jones was 13 episodes, and I was like, awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
I still think Jessica Jones was too long. Daredevil was the right amount.
This might be a good segue. Stranger Things was how many episodes?
It was 8, and that's how many episodes of Jessica Jones I thought there should have been.
Right. Yeah, and that's, because like how many times did like, Kilgrave got away. We got to get him back out. We got him back.
Yeah,
he got away again.
It happened too many times.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, talking about something that everybody loves, I just finished it like last week. I know you finished it. Everyone has been talking about Stranger Things since it came out.
Yeah.
And today, Netflix announced that there's going to be a season two.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it's like I kind of knew there was going to be a second season. I remember when I had finished it, I talked to somebody who'd seen it.
I mean, there's
like,
a second season of almost everything that Netflix has ever made.
That's what I'm saying. I wasn't really expecting there not to be, and there was. It's like one of those things where I get this as the official announcement from Netflix, so we know it's confirmed, but it's I know one person that watched the show that didn't like it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of my roommates watched it, and she was basically saying, like, had she watched it 6 weeks earlier before all the hype was so huge,
yeah,
she would have liked it. But by the time she saw it, the hype was so huge, she's expected to be blown away, and she's like, well, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as I had expected it to be.
And that's how I felt about it. I thought it was good. And I watched it like as the hype was building. Like,
yeah.
Like you mentioned it, and somebody at work mentioned it, and somebody else meant like it was one of those, which is how I got into Doctor Who initially.
Yeah.
Was people who didn't know each other kept talking.
Yeah.
About it.
That's
so I was like, you know what? That's a consensus from people I respect.
Yeah. That's, I picked that up from you. That's, it's one of those things that kind of repeat, and that's kind of how I sell stuff that I like is. Look, Stranger Things is a perfect example of that. A lot of people who don't know each other recommended the same thing in a very short amount of time, like a week. And that's a good signal for me to check that thing out, right? It's just like, oh, yeah, absolutely. This guy said it, and this customer mentioned it, and this person I know, and this person I know. And it's like a good, you know, barometer to see kind of what, like, society overall is into, you know, if
right.
a bunch of people don't know each other, you know?
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting. I thought it was good. I wasn't like, I didn't go crazy over it, but I was like, all right, let's see what happens. The thing that hooked me the most, which I actually didn't know about before I got into it because the hype hadn't built up that much, was the 80s nostalgia of it. It hit me really hard because the time it's set is like 1983, 82. It's 83. And the time it is set, I was the exact age of the boys in it. And I'm like, not only is it referencing all the movies of that time, you know, there's a ton of E.T., there's a ton of Evil Dead, there's a ton of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
There's a lot of The Thing. But it was also like, when I saw those kids in that dress having those conversations, I was like, at that age, I was riding my bike.
You were one of those kids.
I was riding my bike to my friend Mike O'Shea's house, and we would play Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And read and trade Marvel comics and play Star Wars action figures. And he had the first modem, and there was one message board.
Yeah.
But we were
those kids. And that's something one of my customers was telling me about it, was that, you know, he had never played like Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, but he's like, dude, I knew those kids. Like that kid without the teeth. I fucking had a kid on my block that was like that. You know, we had this guy was our buddy. It's like he just grew up with, oh yeah, that guy's older sister was kind of a jerk and she was hooking up with this weird guy. It's like,
yeah.
It's such like a love letter to the 80s. And obviously I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about because I was born in 86.
And that's my question for you. Since you're born in 86, so your first memories are 90s, basically.
Yeah.
So what was the appeal for you?
See, that's the thing is I don't have obviously any nostalgic, I'm not very nostalgic anyway, but I don't have a affinity for the 80s and I don't have the affinity for horror. I'm not like a big horror guy. I don't care.
Not.
But I think I'll watch anything if it's well done. And I think it was just a smart, like, well-thought script. All the characters are really well-balanced. I liked all the kids. There wasn't anything really... There's nothing really like it that I can point to. The closest thing to Stranger Things is a comic called Paper.
Made in the 80s.
Well, but other than things that are made in the 80s that I probably don't know about, because like I said, this isn't anything I know about, is there's a comic Brian K. Vaughan's doing with Cliff Chang called Paper Girls. And it's basically like the same thing. And it's four or five girls and they have a paper out and they're in the 80s. And then like weird time travel interdimensional shit starts happening. and they meet, like, they get thrown into the future, and they see an Apple Watch, and then there's, like, future versions of themselves, and it's very Stranger Things-esque. Okay. So if you like Stranger Things, and you want to read comics that are like Stranger Things, I could not recommend a comic highly enough other than Paper Girls, which is a comic I'd recommend even if you weren't a fan of Stranger Things. It's just a great comic.
Looks like you did your greatest thing in the world way too early.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be, like, this week, because it's not like this is something that came out this week, but the first trade's available. We've got it in the shop. It's a great book. It's just good art, good writing, good story. It's, like, all around a great product. Mm-hmm. So there isn't any kind of, like, specific hook about the characters or the time period or the authenticity of the time period. It's more that it was a good show. And, my tastes aren't exactly, like, mainstream, you know. It's like I gave up on Walking Dead when everyone was really getting into it. It's like I'm not saying I'm some barometer for like what the public is into, but I think it was a really well done show. I liked it, and I'll be back for the second season. It's like, yeah, count me in. It's like as many as y'all want to do, like the redneck guys, like I'm out. This show, just every what's her name in it was great.
Winona Ryder is fantastic.
Yeah, and it's just like it's just like the kids, they're all good.
Renee had the best reaction was she didn't know Winona Ryder was in it. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
And one of my friends was explaining it to me in like a roundabout way where I wasn't getting, cause she's like, she's like, we're watching Stranger Things. I'm like, keeps popping up on Netflix. What is it about? She goes, well, it's about these kids that get abducted. And I was like, oh,
I know. It's the pitch is terrible. People were talking to me about it and they would be like, Stranger Things, check it out. And then I wasn't really sure what it's looking at. I read
or are your friends Dr. Steve Brule?
essentially. You know, it's like a lot of people.
Stranger Things.
Check it out. And, so then I'd read the description on Netflix, and the description's awful. It's like four kids are in a small town in Indiana in a mysterious abduction. I'm just like, fucking kill me. It's like, I don't give a fuck. I don't care about kids. I don't care about Indiana.
Right.
Fuck.
Well, it sounds like a true crime thing, and I find those just depressing.
Terrible.
And I think I may have mentioned this because we brought this up as our greatest thing in the world.
And yeah, because like, it was you, me, and Kevin, right?
I had just started it.
Yeah,
and you guys
and he
had finished it.
Yeah, okay.
And when I heard that description, I thought it was going to be like Broadchurch, which was the David Tennant show about a child murder, which was just the first season was interesting, but then the second season was just it just dragged it out of you. And then they did an American version with Anna Gunn, who is Skyler on Breaking Bad, and David Tennant, and it was just like it was just. You know, it was just horrible to watch. And so I thought Stranger Things was going to be that.
Yeah.
But it's almost like a Garth Marenghi or a Danger 5, which are shows that are like making fun of the 80s, but doing it seriously.
Yeah, it was just, like I said, I don't know. I probably had like a free night and the roommates were gone. So I was like, all right, I got the TV to myself. I watched the show everyone's talking about. And, I mean, I was hooked that first episode. I mean, I remember watching the credits and being like, what the fuck is this 80s bullshit?
Yeah.
Because I'm not, like, some huge fan
of the
80s.
And you see there's, like, a generator now to, like, type anything you want in those credits.
Yeah. One of my subs, this guy Marco Garcia, is a really good dude. He sent me the link for it on Facebook. He's like, hey, check it out. And he had typed in Chimera's Comics or whatever. And, I mean, the font generator is awesome. And, it was something where it's like I initially saw that intro and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I don't care about the 80s. I don't have any nostalgic for it. I don't get it. And by the end of the season, I was like, what a great fucking intro. I was like, great font, great music. Like, I love how it's 80s. And I was like, they fucking had me hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. And when we saw Winona Ryder, Renee looked, she was like, is that Winona Ryder? I'm like, yeah. She goes, of course, because it's the 80s.
Yeah. It's awesome.
But she was phenomenal in it.
She was great. And, you know, like I said, you know, the kids were okay. Some of the kids were better
at
acting.
They're all good, yeah.
But, they're kids. You know, it's like, I don't expect a kid to give a fucking Oscar a performance or whatever. But they all are good. You know, you kind of feel for the kids. You like them all, which is cool.
Yeah, I'll watch season two, but I don't know that I needed one. Like, that season felt very complete.
It did.
And that's, if I've had one problem with Netflix, in general, it's just that by a lot of their shows, by season three or four, I'm out. Like, I dropped Orange is the New Black.
I did the same. I dropped
House of Cards. I was just like, I don't want to go back to this world anymore because they do such a good job of crafting it.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, they, Luke Cage is coming out at the end of the month.
Right.
Very excited for that because we're it's building on both the Marvel Cinematic Universe that we know, but the Netflix.
They've got their own little universe now.
Because it's not really Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's tangentially... I don't even think it's tangentially related to S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's very, very loosely tangentially related to the Marvel Universe.
Right, and they're all supposed to be the same thing, but, like, I don't know, I couldn't see, like, Agent Coulson showing up in Luke Cage.
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't seem to fit, but it doesn't really necessarily contradict it either. So,
right.
I mean, a couple things about Netflix. For example, House of Cards, I fucking love. And I can't wait. I don't know when the next season comes on. I don't pay attention to this shit.
Season 3.
I fucking love that show. I'll watch as many as they want to do. Kevin Spacey, half my money. Orange is the New Black is something. Ruby Rose was a person that I only recently kind of knew was like a thing that existed in the world.
Yeah.
And I think she's amazing. Like, kudos to that girl. Super lovely, super beautiful, like, super smart, talented, lovely actress. She's like in the newest season, I guess.
Because she was in season 3. And that was the last one I watched.
Yeah. And I watched season 2. And I started season 3 thinking, okay, I'm not really super still into the show, but Ruby Rose shows up and I'll stick it out. And she shows up in, like, the later half of the season. I couldn't get through it. I gave up.
Really?
So I gave up on Orange is the New Black, but I still watch House of Cards. And then with, like, the Luke Cage and Daredevil and all this stuff, Daredevil, give me as many seasons as you want.
Yep.
I'll try Jessica Jones season 2. And I'll try Luke Cage season 1.
Yep.
But what the fuck are either of those shows going to look like? Iron Fist, do as many as you like. But the problem is...
Iron Fist is the one where I don't know what it's going to look like, because Luke Cage was already in Jessica Jones, so I'm imagining it's going to look like Jessica Jones and Daredevil. But
and that's the thing,
about
it's,
Luke Cage.
I read all the Alias that they've done, all the Jessica Jones comics.
Yeah, you lent me
the
omnibus, so I
all
read
that
it
stuff.
As well.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
And they brought that, they're bringing that book back because Bendis is terrible.
Well, also because Jessica Jones was a hit on Netflix.
Yeah, and they're bringing the creative team back, so there's an interest, which
is
fine.
Yeah, there's a lot of comic people who's like, I watched this on Netflix, why doesn't she have a comic?
Right. And they just released like a trade actually this week, Jessica Jones, Avenger, and it's like all her bullshit one-shots or whatever. There isn't anything left to do with season 2. I don't know where they're going to go. Everything is in the omnibus, and it's all been done. The whole thing.
But, you know, Marvel doesn't necessarily adapt stuff.
Agreed. And that
I
they
mean,
don't...
you look at the movies. Age of Ultron was not the Age of Ultron
crossover in any shape or form.
And
the first Avengers movie
isn't
based on any comic.
You can go wherever you want.
Agreed. And I think it's something where... I don't mind them coming up with their own stuff, and I don't mind them doing their own thing. Most of these movies aren't based on a specific comic, or they pull from so many that it's unrecognizable. The issue I have, then, is that they're left to their own devices. Will they come up with stuff continuously that's worthy of being made, right? So, like, Jessica Jones, Alias is a great show. It's not perfect, but it's good. But do we need 2 seasons of Jessica Jones, or should she just show up now in Luke Cage? Same thing. You can get maybe 1 season of Luke Cage. The fuck are you going to do in Luke Cage season 2? Is there an ongoing Luke Cage comic book that I'm not aware of? Because it's a book that gets canceled after a year constantly.
They just greenlit a Jendi Tartakovsky version, which will be 4 issues.
Right. And it's supposed to be a miniseries.
Right.
And Iron Fist, the same thing.
Because he's bringing back Samurai Jack, so this guy's not going to stand a month.
Right. And Iron Fist is a good book. The Brubaker Fraction stuff was phenomenal. I never cared about Iron Fist until that book. You could maybe do 2, maybe 3 seasons. End of life for Iron Fist. Daredevil's been an ongoing book since the 1960s.
Well, the idea of this thing was just to do a season so we could get to Defenders, but as they're getting more popular,
right.
It seems like Defenders is just getting pushed further and further out.
Right, and it's like, I think it'll be eventually.
And the main
happen.
Defender is Doctor Strange, who's getting a movie.
Right, and none of the Defenders that are going to be in this show are original Defenders. Not one of these characters was even a Defender until very, 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 very recently. You know, none of the original Defenders are going to be in this team.
Well,
which
the original Defenders, the Hulk, the Silver Surfer, and Doctor Strange. One character they don't even have.
Exactly. And that's the thing where it's like, I don't mind them making these street-level characters the Defenders. I think that's a good idea. And I think Defenders kind of work better as this like street-level team of guys trying to protect the little guy. That's a great idea. Do we need 2-3 seasons of Luke Cage? I don't think so.
And that's kind of how I feel about Stranger Things. I mean... unless we're going to go somewhere a little different.
Right.
You know, there was definitely threads that could carry into season two, but I didn't finish it thinking, where's season two? And I didn't think about those characters again, and I didn't think about where that plot was going to go. Like, you could end this and walk away, as far
as
I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I get they did, you know, the last episode, they leave it kind of open, and they show a couple different places they're going to go with
right. What
the season's going to be, and that's fine. I don't mind a second season, I think, because I like the show, if they have a story to tell.
Right.
But don't do a second season if it's like, well, it made a lot of money, and a lot of people watched it, so let's make a second one. It's like, well, do you have a story? Nah, fuck it. We'll just make one. It's like, I'd rather you just not ruin a show that I like with a shitty second season.
But then again, you have a show like Fargo. Did you watch Fargo?
No, because that's the same thing. It's like, something about that movie really depresses me, so I don't.
It's kind of, you know, it takes place in the dead of winter and people are being murdered.
Right. But, both things I don't like.
But the show, the first season, I was really wary of. I'm like, wait, is a guy who's not the Coen brothers doing the Coen brothers? This is going to be horrible. And it was a story that had the same tone, but it wasn't the same story. And then they finished that story. It was completely finished. It was completely done and fine. And then they said, the second season, we're going to go back to like the early 80s, and we're going to show this one character who's like an older character who David Carradine played. David Carradine or Keith Carradine? Which?
Kill Fuck Bill. If I know.
The one who's Kill Bill is dead. His brother is still around and was in Deadwood. But David Carradine played like the father figure in season one. And they're like, we're going to go back and show him as a young guy. And then they announced it was the guy who played Night Owl in Watchmen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck you that, hate that guy. I hate that guy. They said also Kirsten Dunst was in it. I was like, fuck this.
Pumpkin face.
And then they did it.
Yeah.
And it was better than the first season. So you never know.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. It's like, I don't mind them doing a second season.
Oh, and fucking Todd from Breaking Bad.
Todd?
Yeah.
The fuck was Todd?
They go to retarded Matt Damon. Like, the young guy at the end who, like, shoots the kid, like, the kid in Jack's gang.
Oh, where he's, like, on a bicycle and they're in the desert and they shoot that kid and put him in the vat of whatever.
Yeah, he's, like, a major character in season two, and I'm like, get fucking Todd. It was, like, the first season was, like...
I love that his name was Todd. I don't know any...
In Breaking Bad, it was.
The only Todds I know, I could be mistaken. The one Todd I know, who probably doesn't listen to show because fuck him. He is
Todd
such
McFarlane?
No, but fuck him too. I don't know any Todd that I like. The one Todd I know in my life personally, I don't really know the guy really well, but he's just a huge douchebag. Like, I couldn't describe in words to you how much of a fucking douchebag this guy is. And Todd McFarlane is also a colossal douchebag. So I like to think, and I could be wrong, there's maybe a lot of nice Todds out there. I don't know
any,
though.
There was a great episode of Talking Dead where the panel was Todd McFarlane and Kumail Nanjiani.
Who is the second person? I don't know who that is.
Kumail is on Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay, sure.
But I knew him in New York when I was doing stand-up, and I always liked him. And I was like, at that point, Silicon Valley hadn't started. So I was like, oh, look, this guy I know, he's on Talking Dead. This is great.
Yeah.
And like, Todd McFarlane gets all like douchey with him. And I, looking on his face, I'm just like, oh no, this guy that I thought was great is horrible. And he's next to me on television.
Yeah.
And that summed up Todd McFarlane for me for the rest of creation.
Yeah, I think I'd like to get people that are fans of Todd McFarlane and lock them in a room with him for 5 hours. And see if they come out of the room, if they're still a fan with him. Because, like, you could lock me in a room with Stan Lee. And I think after 5 hours, like, we'd be fine. You know, I'd probably be wanting to get away from him. But I think it's like, I'd still think he's a good dude. Todd McFarlane is just like, it's like, there's just so much of a fuck of a person. You know what I mean?
There was an old sketch on Saturday Night Live on Weekend Update where it was back when Dennis Miller was the host. And he goes, let's check in with the Win a Weekend with David Lee Roth winner. And they cut to a hotel room and it's John Lovitz. And I forget who was playing David Lee Roth. It was probably like Dana Carvey. And he's just jumping on the bed. He's going, what was that? And John Lovitz just looks as depressed and miserable as a human being could.
Yeah.
And he's holding up a sign that says, help me. That would be your 5 hours with Todd McFarlane.
Yeah, either that or I'd kill him because fuck that guy. But, so I'm glad, that guy's name was Todd. It's fitting.
Yeah, but anyway,
it's a fitting name for an idiot.
It is very possible that Stranger Things season 2 could be better than season 1.
Yeah, it's one of those shows like I like the first season. I don't care what they do for the second season. I'll kind of give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But as soon as that show goes south, I'm in the wind. There's no loyalty for brand. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's like,
well, I'm not connected to those characters.
Well, I'm connected to the characters. As long as the show and the writing is good, it's I'm invested in those characters. Like that kid that played 11. It's like I've never wanted to hug like a little girl so much because she's so sweet. And you're just like, oh, you poor little girl. And, you know, the other kids, the D&D kids, it's like, those are my people, you know? So it's like, I feel for those kids.
Those people are paying your rent.
Yeah, they are. Or they will be very soon. But what's cool is, so as long as the next season is good, I'm all in.
Yeah.
But if it goes down, it's like, there's nothing really keeping me there. I might stick it out for a third season if it's really short, like the 8 episodes or whatever. But if it's a train wreck of a second season, I'm in the wind. Yeah, I don't have time to watch every show.
It's interesting with Netflix. Maybe because it's so binge-worthy that you're kind of watching a 10-hour movie instead of making an appointment to come back every week. Like, I'm having the hardest time quitting Gotham, and I know I should.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's
like a bad thing. It's like a bad drug. You can't quit.
Yeah, I'll watch it once a week, and I'll make fun of it. And every now and then, it'll be a good episode, and I'll be happy. But with Netflix, like, I recently got into BoJack Horseman. And they just
were talking about this a couple weeks ago.
They just put out season 3, and when I saw the first season, I was like, I don't like the way that looks. I'm not going to get into that. And I was like, Will Arnett's good, but he does everything, And then I started watching it, and Paul F. Tompkins was in it, who I love, and everything. And Amy Sedaris is in it, who I love, and Alison Brie, who is perfect. It was full of people I like, so it was kind of like Archer, where I'm like, I don't really like Archer, but I love everybody
on
it.
I really like Archer.
I always watch it. I watch it.
Yeah.
But then season 2 was great, and I was like, you know what? I had to get through like 14 episodes to get here.
Yeah.
So it's that give and take, but had I been watching it week to week, I might not.
Yeah, that's the thing is that there is now a thing. It's like the only show I think I actually watch week to week is Game of Thrones. But like there's no other show I think I could do that with where if I can't binge it or I can't watch it at my own pace whenever I want, whenever I have a free minute, it's not going to fucking happen.
Yeah, I think that the one show I look forward to every week is John Oliver.
Yeah, I will say that's the only other show where I watch, and I guess I watch The Daily Show when I'm at the shop or whatever.
I watch The Daily Show from time to time, and I'm watching Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
Oh, she's great,
I only catch
the YouTube clips that they put up on Mondays, or maybe it's Tuesdays because the show's Monday night, I think.
Samantha Bee is Oliver's Sunday night.
She's on Sunday night?
No, John Oliver's Sunday night, Samantha Bee's Monday night.
Oh, okay. And that kind of like trio of like, that's kind of unfortunately where I have to get my news now because fuck Fox and everyone else.
Well, we're in this interesting place where The Daily Show is so old that they've spun off people that are doing that job in different ways. So you can kind of get the full coverage now by watching people that have been on The Daily Show.
And they're all good. Yeah. It's like John Oliver.
Trevor Noah's really coming along.
He is. You know, he's no Jon Stewart, and it has to be different than Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people that stopped watching when Jon Stewart left. I know a lot of people that are watching now that he's gone because they didn't like him or whatever. But it's like, you know, it's got to be different. And my brother actually, my brother David's in D.C. and just saw John Oliver. He did a stand-up at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
And he said it was just awesome. It's like
he's a great stand-up.
He is. He's,
he
and
actually
I watched
had
his
Mike Lawrence, who we talked on the top of the show.
Oh, did he?
He had a stand-up show on Comedy Central before
He had that show.
Yeah, Mike Lawrence was on it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I watched some of that, and I watched his most of his stand-up stuff. He did a show in Canada where he had like a lot of international and with a mix of American comics talking about like the downfall of America. And it was like guys like Greg Proops was on and Colin Quinn, mm-hmm. who's like a great
Colin Quinn's
great. And he's pretty underrated, I think. He was great on like Weekend Update a billion years ago. But
he followed Norm Macdonald.
He followed Norm Macdonald. Norm Macdonald's obviously really great. And it's something where it's just like he's one of those dudes where it's like I always hope that he's doing stuff and you know, years go by and then you see him do stuff and you're like, oh great. And I watched his special, he's good.
Yeah, that show Tough Crowd for a while. Did you ever see that?
No.
He had a panel show on Comedy Central, kinda like Larry Wilmore that just ended.
Yeah.
But it was like all these like tough guys from the Comedy Cellar. And the Comedy Cellar, if you don't know, is this comedy club in the Village, and when we were doing stand up, that was like this, not a mecca because it was a dirty little hole.
Yeah,
A lot of Louis is shot there when Louis doing stand up and that ceiling's
really
low.
Wall.
Yeah, the brick wall, yeah, the low ceiling is the Comedy Cellar.
Okay,
and Colin Quinn would get all the comics that were big at the Comedy Cellar, and they would just open a newspaper and do jokes on the newspaper. And it just seemed like an improv-y hanging out kind of like this. And it ran for a few years.
He just seems like kind of like...
Actually, it ran before the Colbert Report started. It was the show before Colbert Report.
It was in like the same time slot or whatever?
Yeah, when it got canceled, they started the Colbert Report.
That's awesome.
Because it followed the
Daily
Show.
He's kind of like my quintessential like Irish New Yorker... you know, blue collar guy. You know what I mean? It's like he so perfectly encapsulates that like whole like.
Oh, he totally does. He reminds me of so many of my uncles.
Oh, I was gonna say it's like you know a thousand guys like that from the old neighborhood or whatever.
They're all firemen.
Awesome. They're all firemen or they're cops. You know, it's like it's all blue collar shit. They're construction workers. Not one of them's ever worn a tie in their life.
But you know what? Let's take that segue. The final thing that I wanted to bring up, and I wasn't even sure I was gonna bring it up. But Gene Wilder passed away. He was 83. He had Alzheimer's for a long time. Mel Brooks was actually on The Tonight Show last night talking about him. And even he was like, look, he was sick. We knew he was going to go. But it's, you know, it's a really hard thing to deal with.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of really good tributes. I actually ended up in like this Facebook, Twitter quote matching because I came home. It was Monday. And I came home and put on The Producers, which I've said to you many times.
Yeah, it's a
the
great
funniest movie.
Movie
ever made. The musical is great. And the movie, the musical, is terrible. But the
which one's the movie, the musical?
They made a movie with Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick with all the songs in it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good.
Oh, I thought I saw that.
And Will
and I
Ferrell
liked it.
Played Franz Liebkin.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
you
but
didn't
I
like that?
No, well, I saw it on stage first. I did. I went when it. I went
and it was still Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick because they do a lot of stage
stuff. I saw it before it blew up because I was like, because I said The Producers is the funniest movie that's ever been made. And if they're going to do Springtime for Hitler on stage, I want to see that happen.
Yeah.
And I cried when I saw Nazis coming out and girls with pretzels on their heads.
Right.
But the original...
Is pretzels like a German thing?
Pretzels
that.
And beer is a German
All
thing.
All right. Okay.
It's like an Oktoberfest thing.
Okay.
But the original movie, which I believe is 1968, is the funniest movie ever made.
Yeah.
I first discovered it when I got into Mel Brooks around the time Spaceballs came out, and which was not his best film looking back, but I was like, oh, well, what else did he do? And I would rent a bunch of Blazing Saddles and History of the World and High Anxiety, and they were all good, but then when I got to The Producers, it blew me away because it's the only comedy that I've ever seen that tops itself with every single scene. Every scene in that movie is funnier than the last scene that happened.
Yeah.
Most comedies, they go along pretty well. Then you have a great, really funny scene. Then they kind of slow down for a little bit. Then you have another great, funny scene. Or they have just jokes throughout. This scene, it opens with Gene Wilder and Zero Mostel screaming at each other. And that's the opening.
Yeah.
And then everyone they meet in this movie is crazier than them.
Yeah.
So I got into this thing on social media. I came home, I put it on, and I'm the kind of dad where I said, we're going to watch this movie because the guy who's in it passed away. And Ben goes, what's this movie about? I'm like, that's about these guys who are going to make this bad play. And he goes, oh yeah, is that the movie where they make the play about Hitler? And he's nine, and I'd forgotten he's already seen it.
Right.
And he's like, that movie's funny.
Well, there you go.
So we watched it again. So I'm on social media, and I was on with a lot of people that were actually on the show. And every now and then when I hit a line that was really quotable, I just tweeted it out. And then the lines just kept coming back. And it was one of those moments, kind of like David Bowie in a way, where you're like, I appreciate this guy. He's out there. He's part of pop culture. But when you remove him, there's all these touch points.
It's like a vacuum.
Well, after The Producers, then you go to Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Which is probably as close as he got to genre. And there was a moment where I was like, well, he was pure comedy. You know, does he really fit our show? We talk about comedy a lot, but we're not a show about comedy.
Yeah.
But then I thought about things like Young Frankenstein. And I'm like, you know what? That's such a part. It's one of the one of the earliest horror comedies. I mean, you can go as far back as Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But Young Frankenstein is better than that. I mean, they nail everything.
Yeah.
In that. And I couldn't get Ben to watch Frankenstein, but I could get him to watch Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many lines in that. So I was quoting lines from The Producers, and then people were quoting Young Frankenstein lines back to me. And we're thinking, that was amazing. And then Eileen Tull, who was on our show, she had the one-woman show about Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Gene Wilder and Harrison Ford made a Western together.
What?
Yeah, it was called The Frisco Kid, and Gene Wilder played a rabbi, and Harrison Ford played a cowboy, and they teamed up.
Is it a serious movie?
No, it was a comedy.
That is amazing.
And Harrison Ford is a street man. It's not a great movie, but it was one of those movies that was on cable constantly.
Yeah.
So I saw it like 20 times when I was a kid. So she started quoting things, so I sent her a picture. It's a picture of like Gene Wilder and Harrison Ford shaking hands in
That's
a Western.
That's awesome.
So, and it just kept coming back. There were so many touch points. And then people started talking about the movies he made with Richard Pryor.
Yeah. There's, I saw this years ago, and it's like a fan drawing or something, and it's either a photograph trace or something, and it's Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder as Iron Fist and Power Man. Have you seen this?
I have not seen that. Will you please post that?
I'll find it and I'll post it on the page. I don't know that I've ever posted anything on the Facebook page, but I'll post this. And it's some kind of like drawing or something, and it's they just drew the costumes over them because it's like clearly a photograph of them like traced. And it's like, this is the greatest comic book movie we'll never get. Like, I know I talk about, what's his name is Doctor Strange, Vincent Price.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, that's my Vincent
Price. Had they
Price.
Made it in the 60s?
Had they made it in the 60s, it's like they could have made it.
Hurry, who's
it would have been awesome. And like, if it's the same thing, it's like if you would have made a Power Man and Iron Fist movie in what, the 80s or whatever.
Well, when they were making their movies like Silver Streak and Stir Crazy, it's like the late 70s, early 80s.
So late 70s, early 80s. Which is the height of like Power Man and Iron Fist, arguably. It's like the kung fu and the blaxploitation
well,
it's and all
when,
that shit. Or when at least
and,
all
well,
that
it's when both books didn't sell well enough, so they just put them in the same book.
But at the height of the sense where it's like the public was kind of focused on that kind of stuff, where it's like, yeah, you know, the Power Man is kind of like as close to Shaft as Marvel could do without getting sued. And
Iron Fist is close to Bruce Lee.
Right. Well, Shang-Chi, really. But yeah, Iron Fist for sure. But it's like you could put those two together and have Iron Man. It's like that would have been like a great comedy movie. If I can find it, I'll post it. It's great. But yeah, I'm an idiot. So I'll preface that by saying I'm like a moron. And I live in a cultural vacuum. But I had thought like Gene Wilder died years ago.
Well, they diagnosed him with Alzheimer's years ago, so everybody knew he wasn't doing well.
Yeah. And I know he's kind of kept it, like, I guess I've learned that he kept his, like, sickness under wraps, and he wasn't really talking about it. He wasn't doing interviews, obviously.
He stopped acting in
decades ago or whatever, you know what I mean, years ago. But, like, my grandma had Alzheimer's, so I've kind of seen firsthand, very up close. My grandma lived with us. She kind of raised us because my parents were always working. I really have seen somebody go from like a really recognizable person to somebody that it's difficult with Alzheimer's specifically because the person isn't really recognizable. There's really nothing left like intellectually or emotionally of that person by the time they pass away. I guess this is like kind of like a little rougher stuff than I wanted to talk about. But no, but I'm saying it's like So that's something for me that I did witness that happen. And for some reason, like I said, I was convinced that Gene Wilder had passed away like years ago. So when somebody had posted on Facebook, like Gene Wilder passed away, and I'm like, oh, it must be like the anniversary or something of his death.
Yeah,
it had been like two or three
that
years.
Happened a couple weeks ago where Gail Simone posted that Yvonne Craig passed away, and it was the year anniversary. And I was like, how does Gail Simone not know that Yvonne Craig passed
away?
Yeah. So that happens on
right. It happens occasionally. Like I said, we kind of, you know, this year specifically, I know Kevin Ryan and a couple of our friends have kind of posted the 2016, fuck you, you've right. taken all our legends. And, you know, I'm sure there's like a study about it, but it's like we are at that point in like our cultural life where these guys who really did define what the last couple decades were about, specifically this year, but you know, Michael Jackson only died a couple years ago. And I mean, find me a bigger cultural icon than Michael Jackson. It's
Prince
like,
died this year.
Right. Prince was this year. You know, David Bowie was this year. Like these titans of
Alan Rickman died.
Alan Rickman, like these titans of our culture have passed away. And it's just like, unfortunately, going forward, it's like we're only going to see kind of more of that. It's just, I think it's something where it's positive to see stuff like you and your friends on Facebook kind of exchanging all these quotes and pointing to, oh, what was your favorite Gene Wilder movie? What was your favorite Gene Wilder movie?
You know, we didn't even mention Willy Wonka, which is the closest thing to genre. And it's interesting because I've always had that argument about the Tim Burton Willy Wonka movie.
Yeah.
Which most people hate.
The new one, yeah.
Yeah, but and it's not even new at this point. It's 10 years old.
Right.
But I'm a big Tim Burton fan. He won me over between Batman and Beetlejuice and Pee-wee that, like, if you haven't guessed this, if you're a long-time listener to the show, if you're like me, you'll be a long-time listener to the show because it takes me a long time to give up on things
right.
that have ceased to give me the pleasure they once did.
Right.
So, you know, I have 40 years of Batman and Spider-Man comics.
Yeah.
I see every Tim Burton movie that comes out. I've never missed an episode of The Simpsons.
And arguably, what was the last good Tim Burton movie? Do you know what I mean? Like, really think about it.
The last classic was Ed Wood, and that's like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I feel like a Frankenweenie was good. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah,
it was
wasn't it like
good.
A remake of some movie he made when he was in college because he's like a big nerd?
It was a short. He made a short, and he made a feature length
out of it. Yeah.
See, he makes movies that are good. You know what? Big Eyes was pretty interesting, but I can't say he's made a great film for 20 years.
Yeah.
But I have defended the Johnny Depp Charlie and the Chocolate Factory for a while because he's doing a different thing and he's all Tim Burton-y with it. And Johnny Depp had yet to reach, you know, annoyingness,
yeah.
which is
annoyingness,
really,
yeah.
It's only happened with, like, within the last year.
I mean, by the fourth or fifth, I don't know how many Pirates of the Caribbean movies they've made, but if more than two, fuck off, Johnny Depp.
Yeah, but this year, I think it was the 1-2 punch of, or maybe it was last year, Mordecai and that ugly divorce.
Well,
where everybody
that,
was
like,
just like, that's enough.
He snuck a dog in Australia or some like nonsense and like got in a dispute with the Australian government. It's like, fuck off, Johnny Depp. Go away. We're done with you.
But actually, like, re-examining Willy Wonka now, because I always said about the two films, I like them equally. They're different.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I like the Tim Burton Batman and I like Batman Begins for different reasons.
Yeah.
But I like them both. They're both Batman. Re-examining Willy Wonka now,
yeah.
That Gene Wilder's path, it's way better.
Yeah, it's just...
And he gives a much better performance because it's way more subtle.
Yeah,
than
it's
Johnny
not
Depp.
The way, you know, Johnny Depp really doesn't have any subtlety. And I probably watched like Willy Wonka like a million times. Like, I really like that movie. But my favorite is Young Frankenstein because it's just like, I don't really remember at what point I'd seen that movie. I definitely remember seeing it as a kid and probably, you know, I'm not a big horror guy, so that was kind of probably the acceptable Frankenstein movie for me. I probably didn't want to watch like the really scary stuff, so I watched this instead. And just the crazy screaming lunacy was like, it blew my mind the way this guy would do it. And I've only ever really seen it in one other performance is in Daniel Day-Lewis. I didn't really know who he was until I saw Gangs of New York. And then I remember watching that movie where he's like an oil baron or something. There Will Be Blood. And I remember watching this movie and thinking like, okay, I know this guy's like a really intense actor and he does all this like crazy stuff where he goes and he lives on like a shore and makes shoes to learn how to whatever bullshit he's doing. And he's super talented. Like, I'm not trying to take away from this guy. And the entire movie, it's a long movie. That entire movie, I'm waiting for that dude to just, the fucking water to boil over the pan. And at the end, he gives that crazy fucking monologue about like the milkshake and the oil and all this shit. And I'm like, there it is. I've been waiting for this guy to kind of boil over the edge. That's the only other time you saw somebody kind of ratchet it up to this level of like, you know, he's not a hugely intimidating guy, but you're just like, holy shit, this guy's out of his brains.
Well, in a movie like that, you'd figure Frankenstein is a straight man because you have Peter Boyle as the monster.
Right.
And you have Marty Feldman as Igor.
That's what I'm
like,
saying.
Basically, you just have to hold that center.
Yeah.
But there's no center in that
and
movie.
And he's crazy.
He's so over the top. And then the women in it. Like, Terry Garr and
the
Madeline.
The horses.
Cloris Leachman. You know, the older I get, the more I think that the most perfect woman in the world is Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
And maybe the modern version of Madeline Kahn is Alison Brie, because I've never seen someone that beautiful and that funny at the same level.
Yeah.
But everything in that movie is just dial-up. And I saw that movie, like you, I can't remember the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
But I saw it way earlier than I saw, like, the Boris Karloff Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know I was, like, 11 when I saw that. And I remember half of those movies, that and Bride of Frankenstein, I went, oh.
Yeah.
Because I saw, like, the build-up for the
before
joke.
Before it, yeah.
And have you seen Son of Frankenstein?
No.
The Kenneth Mars character from Young Frankenstein is from Son of Frankenstein. There's a burgomaster with, like, a wooden arm.
Yeah.
With that whole, like...
That's
and, like,
awesome.
It's all from Son of Frankenstein, and it just seemed like this crazy character who showed up.
And I guess, see, that's the thing. It's like I'm probably missing, like, a lot of the jokes that are in Young Frankenstein because I haven't seen all these other Frankenstein movies that they're maybe referencing.
You haven't seen all the Universal Monsters
movies? Well, I've seen, like, I saw Frankenstein, but I don't...
You haven't seen Bride of Frankenstein?
I probably haven't seen... Right, I don't know that I have. Whoa. I may have, but I don't
I
know.
I have all the Blu-rays this Halloween.
I'm definitely
them.
In. Lisa's got a lot of those Blu-rays. She's like really
into
the
loves
Universal
them.
Stuff.
We had a,
she loves them.
I think our first year we had a podcast about them.
Yeah, we did the horror podcast we were doing
those,
in October.
In October, you should show those in the store because they're store appropriate.
Yeah, there's nothing crazy in them. But yeah,
and those
it's,
monsters are so iconic, they might as well be superheroes.
That's what I'm saying. They're as iconic as superheroes. We've sold their action figures, you know?
Yeah, well, that was the thing. If you go back, we should have ended the show already, but if you go back to like the generation... The pre-Star Wars generation, and Dana Gould, who's one of my favorite comedians, who has my favorite podcast of all podcasts called The Dana Gould Hour.
Yeah,
I like it so much that John Suntress and I will have conversations on Facebook about how much we like The Dana Gould
that's
Hour.
That's awesome.
And he's got a podcast that's way better than this
right.
one. But he's obsessed with Planet of the Apes because he was too old for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And he was of that generation where they just loved monsters. And the... And those famous monsters of Filmland magazine and, like, the kids that were into Planet of the Apes and the Universal Monsters, they built them up to superhero status.
Yeah.
So, like, when you think of Frankenstein, you think of the Boris Karloff Frankenstein, and that's what Peter Boyle is doing.
Yeah.
And Young Frankenstein, I don't know if you know this or if you remember this, Gene Wilder wrote it.
Yeah, no, I... That he wrote the movie, no idea.
He wrote it. He actually came
to... I just assumed it was, what's his name?
Mel Brooks.
Yeah, Mel Brooks.
Well, Mel Brooks helped him with it, but on the set of Blazing Saddles... Gene Wilder said to Mel Brooks, "Hey, I got this idea from Ooh, we're doing a Western parody. I got a Frankenstein parody."
Yeah,
and that was all from Gene Wilder.
That's awesome.
And like he was just this guy, and I mean, he was this guy where when I thought about him some more, like David Bowie, or like Prince, where these guys were like, well, they're not really comic book guys, but they have so many touch points that connect to other things.
Oh yeah,
they're like they're. You know, Gene Wilder's like the spine of the 70s. He's in Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
You know, he's in Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex, But We're Afraid to Ask, a Woody Allen movie. He's in all of these things. There's a crazy-ass movie on Amazon Prime that I saw about a year ago. Actually, when I was between jobs, I was like scouring Amazon Prime, called Rhinoceros, that teamed up him and Zero Mostel, and it was about the apocalypse, but instead of zombies, everyone turns into a rhinoceros.
Sure. that is awesome.
And like Gene Wilder's the last human being in a world of rhinoceroses.
So it's kind of like that Vincent Price movie where he's like the last man on Earth.
The last man on Earth. Yeah, yeah, the version of I Am Legend.
Yeah.
So you know what? Let's let that. It's crazy. It's weird. When it finished, I was like, what was that? Why have
that
I never
awesome.
Heard of this?
Yeah.
But you know what? That's my recommendation.
Sure. Go watch that.
I'll
go watch it.
I think it's still on Amazon Prime, so it's free.
Yeah.
Watch Rhinoceros.
Rhinoceros.
If you want to see some
I'll
Gene
go dig
Wilder.
Around for it.
And in the meantime, follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. You could have followed conversations about Gene Wilder this week. Go to our Facebook page. We posted like the Deathstroke footage this week on Facebook. And you can listen to all of our episodes on iTunes. You can listen to The Monstature, or you can go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com and listen to every single episode we've ever done. And Steven?
You can find me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!